Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Nick Lowry Show. I'm your host, Mike Brown. On today's show, we will be covering the topic of bullying, both physical and cyber. Our guest today will be Dr. Justin Patchen, co-director of the Cyberbullying Research Center. Unfortunately, today's topic of bullying is very relevant in the news. Earlier today at Franklin Regional High School in Murrysville, Pennsylvania, there was a mass stabbing. A student apparently stabbed 20 other people on the campus. The media is reporting through other students this individual was possibly bullied. In many cases like this, the student has been bullied in some manner. I would like to now bring on our guest today, Dr. Justin Patchen. Dr. Patchen is a professor of criminal justice in the Department of Political Science. He has spoken at the White House and the FBI Academy and has appeared on CNN, NPR, and in the New York Times to discuss issues related to teens' use and misuse of technology. He has authored many books, including his recent book he co-authored, Words Wound. I would now like to introduce Dr. Justin Patchen. Hello, Doctor.
Hi, Mike. Glad to be with you. Hi.
Well, thanks for joining our show today. Actually, it's strange. We have some relevant topics on this issue of bullying. But before we get to that, I'd first just like to get some history of the Cyberbullying Research Center, if you could.
Sure. So my colleague Samir Hinduja and I have been studying teens' use and misuse of technology since about 2001 or 2002. And not very many people were studying it back then. We quickly learned that cyberbullying was a problem, and that educators and parents and teens themselves wanted resources that they could use to help combat this problem. So we set up the center. Basically, it started as our website, which is cyberbullying.us. We launched that in 2004, 2005, and we post the results of our research. We post blogs, usually on a weekly basis, summarizing the research that we've done. And we have, like I said, we've got resources for everybody who is interested in doing something about this problem. We've surveyed over 15,000 students in 10 different surveys over that time period, and basically try to translate the research into things that folks can use to prevent and more adequately respond to the cyberbullying.
Okay. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to bring on our co-host today, Kansas City Chiefs Hall of Famer and founder of the Nick Lowry Youth Foundation, Mr. Nick Lowry. Hello, sir. How are you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you?
Well, I'm doing okay. I was just explaining to the doctor it's a strange day. I plan to do this show. I woke up earlier this morning and I found out there was a mass stabbing at a school in Pennsylvania, Franklin Regional. I wanted to start out first, however, Nick, by letting us know, give us some history and information of your website and your youth foundation, what you're doing for these kids.
You know, I'm in a little bit of a disingenuous mood. I feel like saying we're creating a zombie generation of kids that will wipe away the planet, but the reality is we're really blessed in the work we do. We are focusing on the missing link, which cyberbullying is really an incredibly important part of the entire picture, which is this gradual desensitization of kids. Many of whom have never learned the social fundamental building blocks to interact with people they don't know and that are not like them, because in a paranoid and dangerous world where every child's time is scheduled, kids don't have those building blocks learned through those unscripted times like we used to have in the afternoons, at least for those of us that are old like me. in the summer to come back to, you know, play with kids in the neighborhood. We don't know, some of whom we don't like, some of whom are, you know, strong-minded and pushy, and some that don't look like us, et cetera, and devise our own rules to work with each other, to find fair, just rules in these games that we devise. And, you know, we're always, if we're always looking at our phones, and if we're always on Facebook, et cetera, in some sort of anonymous way, not truly interacting with someone's spirit by looking them in the eye, by touching them at least in terms of, you know, that sort of space that we allow others to invade, always from behind a wall, if you will, we don't learn how to interact and develop that, that sensitive, nuanced interaction with people so that we can truly get to know each other. And so, and then we have, of course, a tremendous amount of narcissism and anger. It's a complex subject. I love trying to help with it. I've seen the results with kids, but it's not a one-day thing. It's not about going in and doing something for a couple hours. It's a long-term solution. It's not going away. And people like your other guest are really thinking very deeply about it. And, you know, hopefully I'm quite confident we're going to help make sure that this is a problem that, that begins to dissipate to some degree.
Okay, gentlemen, I would like to move on now to the issues today. First of all, we have to discuss this mass stabbing event today at Franklin Regional High School in Murrysville, Pennsylvania. I'm going to start with you, Doctor. Is this a result of bullying in the school system? We're seeing this more and more incidents like this, practically a few a year. What was your initial reaction when you saw this today?
Well, I think, you know, this incident this morning definitely raises, you know, the issue, and so much we're focused on kind of mass shootings, but this shows that, that it'll, you know, even without a gun, there can be significant casualties and involving knives or any number of other weapons. But, you know, going back to the original question, so was this a function of bullying? We don't know that yet. It'll take a while to get to the bottom of this. There's certainly been more examples highlighted in the media in the last 5 years where there have been suicides at school or shootings at school or suicides associated with students that have been linked to bullying and or cyberbullying. The connection is pretty tenuous. We've done some research on this question. We know that experiences with bullying and cyberbullying are associated with suicidal ideation, with depression. But the research hasn't advanced enough to be able to say that one causes the other. The other thing is we know that a good proportion of students have experienced bullying. So depending on the study that you look at, you know, 30 to 40% of students have been bullied at some point in a lifetime. And in our research and in others, probably 20 to 25% of students have experienced cyberbullying. So when you have a situation like this, where, you know, there's an incident involving a student and you look at their past, it's very likely, and almost half the time, you're going to see an experience with bullying or cyberbullying. Does that mean those experiences caused this behavior? We don't know. There's going to have to be an investigation to determine the extent to which that proved a factor.
Nick, you speak in schools to the kids about bullying. First of all, your initial reaction today when you found out about this incident, and when you're in the schools, what are some solutions that you talk to the kids about how to prevent incidents like this?
Well, first of all, I think it's important to clarify some of my experience. I helped launch AmeriCorps for President Clinton. I went to Harvard. I got my master's in leadership. I've been doing leadership training with Native youth for now 14 years, really 18 with Native Vision, with the NFL Players Association and Johns Hopkins Center for American Indian Health. You know, I've really been looking much more about development in the broader notion of the brain and how we learn to make decisions, and looking at populations like the Native American population that have a tremendous amount of abuse in their background, and how kids process emotion and express their feelings. I absolutely defer to the doctor about cyberbullying and its complexity. We do know, and I know we can agree, that kids that don't ever get out of this bullying mindset are much more likely to have experiences of actually manifest some form of abuse at home in their future relationships, if not more increased likelihood of prison time. I know that the Cyberbullying Institute looks at the criminal side of it as well. So, you know, I try not to differentiate between, and it may be dangerous to do so, but I try not to differentiate between a criminal mindset of someone whose choices are tragic early in life and the more subtle choices of those that are perhaps reasonably more healthy. They're still part of the spectrum of how we develop as human beings. And my message to kids, it certainly helps to be a former pro athlete. Sometimes you get a little bit more respect. Sometimes it doesn't help. But my challenge is to address this notion of narcissism that manifests in many schools with the varsity athletes. A friend of mine, Dr. Erin Nelson, in her work, in her PhD work, works now with the police department in a lot of murder investigations in Phoenix. Her original work was with the kids from Columbine and their families that were, you know, dealing with that tragedy. And she underscored my perception from some reading about that experience and from some of the other tragedies we've had, including perhaps today, that one of the pieces of this is this narcissism with varsity athletes or some culture within the school where some people are, you know, supremely cool, if you will, on the social ladder, and others just don't matter. And while those individuals, Harris and Kleibold and Columbine, while they probably would still be jerks if they had had a varsity culture, social culture, where they were embraced at some minimal level for their difference rather than shunned, it may well have been enough to prevent this actual tragedy. So I'm interested in the complexity of it. We look at the notion of empathy as the underlying theme that we try to encourage, the idea that I'm not a leader, I'm not a champion, if you will, if I take power from others, and power can be manifested in many different ways. And of course, if I take the light I'm given as an athlete, and for a lot of these kids, it's before high school, but if I'm an athlete, and I learn to share that, and I sit at lunch as the Queen Creek varsity football team started to do with Shai Johnson, who was being spat on and having trash thrown at her. She was a developmentally disabled young lady in Arizona, Queen Creek, Arizona. And suddenly she blossomed. She became incredibly popular on that team and taught those others on the team a lesson about empathy, her insight into each of their personalities. And I don't think it's completely a coincidence that Queen Creek, this is just a year and a half ago, Queen Creek went on to be the only undefeated team in the entire state of Arizona at any level. Now, I interviewed those kids after they asked me to speak to them at their school, and even the backups, even the kids that could be jealous of the star quarterback and the running back who got all the press with Rick Riley and Sports Illustrated and ESPN, they said the same thing, that as much as winning the championship was wonderful, what they learned as human beings to share their success, to reach out to kids that were not like them, was the supreme lesson of a lifetime. And I was truly humbled by that, thinking how far away from that level of maturity I probably was at their age.
Doctor, you have a degree in criminal justice. You're a professor. I like to talk about this issue at these schools from what would you do, in your opinion, to stop these incidents? I know it's hard, you know, putting, you know, security guards at the doors. There's so many schools, you know, it's a cost issue. Any information or any ideas you would have for this problem we're having in all these schools?
Well, I think to some extent, you know, the criminal justice system, which is, you know, where I train, you know, future criminologists and police officers and correctional officers, criminal justice system is sort of the last place we want to be handling these things, and it pretty much means that everything else has failed. And so Nick's exactly right in terms of trying to instill empathy and the importance of parents working with educators to ensure that children do the right thing, they have integrity, and you know, all those things matter. And it's important for parents to work with schools to address the minor forms of bullying and cyberbullying before they get to the point where a kid feels that it's necessary to bring a weapon to school for their safety or to exact revenge. So I'm not sure, you know, putting a school resource officer in every school, putting cameras in every school, you know, I've been in these schools where there's, you know, the metal detectors in the front door, and it's just, we don't want to become one of those societies where you just have to constantly be on guard. It's like you're going to school in a prison. So we do need to do the harder, sort of earlier work of instilling proper values with our kids, and that's a challenge.
You know, let me comment on that as well,
sure.
Because, Michael, you know, what part of the problem we have today, I think, is the somewhat overreaction, and parents always want to err on the side of being careful to shut their kids off from, you know, playing alone in a park at the age of 9 and 10 because, you know, the 1 in 1,000 chance that they're going to be, you know, kidnapped or et cetera, or whatever the chance is. And I think that, this is just pushing it farther along the spectrum of shutting down those healthy interactions that are awkward, unpredictable, chaotic, where we all learn social skills. I'm 57. I feel like I'm 27. But I'm always learning every day a little bit more about how to interact with empathy, how to shut up a little bit as a recovering, if you will, narcissistic professional athlete, and listen to others and build that sense of I think a better word is community than family in the room, so that people feel they're understood or that they're, the other person's interested in them. Those are skill sets I know I'll be trying to improve on when I'm 157. So, you know, when we shut off, Dr. Patchen was talking about, we shut off more and more ways to work and learn with each other and learn to understand each other. It is a dirty, busy, messy environment called the world, the real world, and there's no other way to learn it except by going through it. We can provide, on the other hand, help. We can provide mentoring, but it's also about those pervasive values of each school, which say it's, you know, that empathy is a supreme value above many of the other important ones.
Gentlemen, I want to transition now into the Miami Dolphins bullying incident with Jonathan Martin and Richie Incognito. It's not only in schools we're seeing this. When these kids see professional athletes doing this, it makes it even that much tougher. Nick, I'm going to start out with you. Your experience as an NFL player in the locker room, what's your thoughts on the whole Jonathan Martin, Richie Incognito incident, and did you see this in the locker room when you played?
Now you're opening up Pandora's box, if you will, of the NFL locker room and all of these romanticized notions of this sort of secret skull and bone society inside the locker room, you know, because women haven't been there and they somehow think that there's some, you know, bizarre, you know, 2,000-year-old Da Vinci Code rules. I mean, it's a bunch of guys and it's not rehearsed and it's, you know, my first reaction will go in the other direction, which is, I was doing an event for United Cerebral Palsy on Saturday with a bunch of NFL players, and we started talking, and I had a great conversation with Kerry Justin, who played 12 years in the NFL, and Johnny Johns, who played with me on the Jets and played with the Cardinals, who played a number of years, great running back. And the first part of it is in the pushback that as all of us have to be able to stand up for ourselves at some minimal level. We also have a society, a politically correct society that says, oh, we have to look after the less fortunate. That's what I do. I mean, my demographic, if you will, is people that have been subjugated and repressed and dumped on. But it's, the answer isn't saying poor you so much as it is deal with it, understand it, protect yourself, gather around you people that will stand up for you too, but also learn, as Jonathan Martin, I don't think has learned, to stand up a little bit, you know, with that person and say, hey, this is not appropriate. I remember my and he's a friend now, Bill Moss, our Pro Bowl nose tackle, and we got, and he was, you know, he was in that category of, shall we say, having a little bit too more weight around the room, and he was a young guy, and, you know, we all have our issues, and we got in a wrestling match. He almost broke my thumb, but he didn't bother me after that, and we're friends now. And so if you don't learn how to, it's not about saying the only solution is a fight. That's not what I'm saying. It is about creating that sense of your own fundamental race, your fundamental respect, integrity, whatever, such that you can say, listen, you know, you have a right to have your opinion, but you're going a little too far now. And at some point in the NFL locker room, that does end up being manifested in some level of physicality. To deny that in the NFL, which is very different from an elementary school in Queen Creek or whatever, is a little bit unrealistic. You have to, as a man, stand up. Heaven forbid, in today's society, say you have to stand up as a man. This is not about being a macho guy. It's not about being, rock-wielding, brain-dead human being who has to have respect at all corners. It's simply creating a healthy level of respect and boundaries that, to some degree, you can't rely on others to create. To some degree, Jonathan Martin didn't create that for himself. And to a great degree, the other leadership in the Miami Dolphins locker room, some of whom had left that year, let Richie Incognito do some stupid, out-of-control things unchecked over a long period of time.
Dr. Patchen, your colleague at the Cyberbullying Research Center actually did an article on this, Jonathan Martin and Richie Incognito. What's your thoughts on this situation, and do you think it's a result of bullies never being taught at a young age?
That might be one, factor. Yeah, Samir Hinduja wrote a couple of posts on our website, so listeners who are interested in sort of getting our broader take can take a look, again, cyberbullying.us. But, a couple of things came out of this that I thought were useful, and the fact that a lot of people ask me, why would a kid ever mistreat, their classmate like this? Why would people bully each other? And I sort of cringe when adults ask me that because, we see a lot of bullying among adults. We see a lot of harassment. We see a lot of mistreatment. So, frankly, we're bad role models in terms of these behaviors. The other thing is, Jonathan Martin's this big football player, and you're supposed to be big and tough, and Nick knows about this. And so for the fact that he demonstrated, I think, he sent a good message to kids that, look, even if you're this football player, these kinds of behaviors can impact you, can affect you deeply. And, there's this sort of issue in middle and high schools that you should just be able to take it. You should suck it up. You should just deal with it. And so I think this, big, masculine, strong football player coming forward and talking about how this experience affected him is a hopeful message to others in the sense that they're not alone and that others are really impacted by these negative experiences as well.
Well, I can tell you, everybody deals with it. Just imagine, you're not Jonathan Martin. You're not 6'5", 320 pounds. You're Nick Lowry, 6'4", 187 pounds. You're an Ivy Leaguer, and you're perceived as being brash because you actually think you can beat out the greatest kicker in the history of the game, Jan Stenerud. You come back to your room when it's getting really heated, and it really players are beginning to realize that, there's a possibility that Jan Stenerud, the old man on the team, the only guy that ever played on their Super Bowl team that was still there, that he might lose his job. And I come back and I find some beautifully fresh, disgusting, worm-filled Missouri cow manure in my bed under the sheets. So I'm about to jump into bed. And in my chest of drawers. And it was absolutely repulsive, just demeaning. But a day later, a funny emotion started to come from within me, which is, I must be getting pretty close. I must be getting pretty close. Maybe this is this dysfunctional way of welcoming me to the team. And Jack Rudney, who I know was one of the perpetrators, who's really the so-called leader on the team, guess who was the first person who came up to me midway through the season when I kicked my first game-winning last-second field goal for the Chiefs? It was him saying, you haven't talked, you've just done your job, and I respect you for it. But there's a different analogy. We have to be careful, just like we have to, discriminate between hazing, between teasing and bullying. And I think it would be great to hear the doctor's definitions of these things because I think we can really confuse people because having a sense of humor and teasing each other sometimes is not unhealthy. But there's a difference in the NFL where you stand up for yourself at the same time. How much of that is building the team ethic? That's where – if it's taking away the sense of trust, et cetera, in the team, maybe that's not so healthy. And I think Jonathan Martin has created a dialogue that wasn't there before. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, it's good. But I still think that there is ample evidence, given that they had 1,500 texts between the two, that there was some enabling going on from him, you know. It's not like he said, this is bad and I've had enough. He played along, perhaps in his own mind, trying to figure out how to, you know, placate the bullying figure. And at some point it was too much. But let's make sure we differentiate between an NFL locker room where you're a warrior in an extremely brutal game, but hopefully with a brutal game with fair rules that isn't about, you know, being a criminal in how you manifest and express your physicality, but within the rules of blocking and tackling, et cetera, and the everyday interactions that kids have on the playground, in the lockers, in the hallways, in the classrooms, and away from school as well.
Absolutely.
Gentlemen, I want to end the show here with an article, Doctor, that you did on what we do as far as formal sanctions, zero tolerance policy, and utilizing public shame. Could you just give us a recap of some of the solutions that you had?
Sure, yeah. So I wrote a blog post maybe a month or so ago highlighting a couple of examples of things we should and shouldn't do with respect to trying to deter kids from engaging in bullying. One of the most important things was sort of to not think that our formal sanctions are going to help in this regard. So passing a new law criminalizing bullying or cyberbullying isn't likely to deter additional students from bullying others, because they, you know, they don't think that way. They don't think they're going to get caught. They don't think they're going to get punished. So what we need to do is foster a lot of the things we've talked about already on this show, and sort of the informal relationships. Give kids a stake in conformity. Get them involved in a club, an organization, a team. Connect and interact with kids. So teachers and parents and, you know, other community leaders need to have that individual one-on-one connection with kids, so that they can pass on their values and talk with them about what is right and wrong, and convince them or convey to them that harming someone else just isn't right. And then I talk with educators a lot about developing a positive school climate and culture. And so there's a lot of things we can do, and you know, there's some research to help suggest what things might be what things would be most likely to be effective. And so I'd kind of highlight some of those things in that article.
Well, Dr. Patchen, I'd like to thank you for coming on the show today. Before you go, can you just let everyone know how they can reach you? I know you have a few books out there. Where can they purchase your books, and anything else you'd like to share for the listeners?
Yeah, so you can check me out, cyberbullying.us. If you Google cyberbullying, usually it comes up near the top. You know, you can look for my name, Justin Patchen. Google me. I mean, yes, we've written a few books. They're all available on Amazon or any online book retailer. So definitely check out the free resources we have on the Cyberbullying Research Center website.
Dr. Patchen, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
Well, Nick, I thought we had a great show, a lot of good discussions. Before we close things up, what do you have going on? Where can people find you? I know you do a lot of speaking engagements. And anything else you'd like to close on this subject of bullying?
You know, just like with the drug problem, the ability of communities to absorb that minimal individualized sense of responsibility, rather than looking for some magic pill or some, you know, Sir Lancelot figure to solve it, it really is a community-based issue. I will say this, something occurred to me as I was listening to this in the role of the teacher. It doesn't get easier when classrooms aren't, you know, 16, 18, 20 students, but 32 and 34 students. You go, really interesting, when I was a drill instructor at Dartmouth College with a group of 12, how I could tell every day, if I was on, they were on. I could tell who was on among the students, et cetera. You start getting to 18 to 20, you can still do it, and each person still feels like an individual. You start moving towards the late 20s and the early 30s in a classroom, and that sense that I'm having a bad day, my dad hit me, my you know, parents had a fight last night, my dad told me I wasn't a man unless I beat up the kid who was teasing me, you know, and no one can in that environment that feels that they're enduring these emotions doesn't really understand them. In a class of 36 kids, it's pretty tough for a teacher to be able to reach out to that person, notice those subtle changes in their body language, et cetera. But anyway, I think a lot of good things are happening now. I would love to work with Dr. Patchen and Samir down in Florida. Maybe we could do something that really is directly related to the dolphins thing in Florida as a proactive thing. And I wouldn't be above having somebody like Richie Incognito be part of the thing. What have you learned from this? You know, just the way if Magic Johnson became the spokesman for how to avoid getting HIV, even though he was the one that got it. And there's an interesting thing. Sometimes Richie Incognito might end up being a really powerful, positive figure. It would be great for him. So I'll throw that out there. You can and probably shock some people by saying that. But I believe that there is a sense of redemption in people. If we don't give them a chance to learn the lessons and apply them, I think Richie Incognito in his interview with Jay Glazer on Fox really showed a different side. Whether that ends up being who he really is consistently, we'll have to see. Because he has been a jerk, in the past, but it looks like he has other qualities. You can reach me directly through my foundation website, which is nicklowryfoundation.org. It'll also get there with nicklowry.org, which is N as in Nancy, N-I-C-K-L-O-W-E-R-Y.org. There's a 6-minute video. I really hope you'll take time to watch, so you get a feeling of what we do that's not just about the assembly, but changing the culture of the school, working with the teachers and the principals, and having that begin to filter and permeate throughout the families in the school and the whole school community. And I'd love to work with you wherever you are. We're all over the country. We'll probably be doing some events in the next year, and even in as far away as Hawaii and up in the Northwest. And, it's blessed work, because these lessons, when you have a 4.0 but you can't get along with people, are you going to be hired? When you can't learn to work with other people that are new to you, no matter how good your academic background is, are people going to employ you or keep you employed for very long? These are fundamental skills that are really at the basis of whether you can enjoy your life and create a community around you that loves being with you and vice versa.
Well, Nick, I thought it was a great show. I mean, we could have went on for hours on this topic. We're going to have to get you and Dr. Patchen on again, because, we can go into so many more aspects, as far as Facebook, social media. So, I really appreciate you coming on the show, and you have a good day, sir.
Thank you, Mike. I really thought you, Dr. Patchen was just a brilliant choice. I'm very impressed with him. Thank you.
Yeah, I did too. Thanks, Nick. I'll talk to you soon. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Well, everyone, that was Nick Lowry. You can visit him at the Nick Lowry Youth Foundation. And, again, I'd like to thank Dr. Justin Patchen. You can find him at the Cyberbullying Research Center. Until next time, I'm your host, Mike Brown. Take care, and bye for now.